Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's a special year-end edition of The Brian Lehrer Show. You are the only guests today. We don't need no Pauls or pundits. Our next call-in, Occupy Your Street. We want to know, what is the most local cause you have worked for this year? Call and tell everybody about it. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. While Occupy Wall Street has global goals, how did you occupy your street for positive change? And I'm talking hyper-local here, starting right with your own home. Did you work with the Tenants Association or Co-op Board this year for positive change in your building? Tell everybody about that. 212-433-WNYC. Getting just a little broader, did you work with your block association for a cause? 212-433-9692. With the block associations, how did you occupy your street, literally? Getting a little broader still, maybe some of you work for a neighborhood association working on whatever issues, fighting crime or poverty or discrimination, protecting your neighborhood's environment, bike lanes pro or con, fighting to close a bad school or save a good one or save a bad school. Some people do that. What's the most local cause you worked on this year? While others were occupying Wall Street, how did you occupy your street? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post your stories about occupying your street to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. We'll put your calls right on the air in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with our special year-end edition of The Brian Lehrer Show. You are the only guests today. Occupy your street now. We want to know what is the most local cause you have worked for this year. Call and tell everybody about it. Our lines are full, but as people finish up, you can get in line next. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Renee in Hell's Kitchen, you're on WNYC. Happy New Year, Renee.
Yes, Happy New Year, Brian. Hope it's a good one for all of us.
Thank you to all, from all of us. And how, if I may speak for all of us for just one moment, and how are you occupying your street?
I am actually occupying a berth in the Hudson River. My volunteer group is helping to restore and maintain a retired New York City fireboat, the John J. Harvey, which was a fireboat, the first fireboat in New York City, the transition from steam to mechanized. She was going to be scrapped, was saved by a group of enthusiasts, and she ended up being one of hundreds of the rescue boats that served at 9/11 to help evacuate Lower Manhattan, as well as provide water to fight the fires. So we're a group of volunteers. We chip paint. We paint things. We are in the process of raising money to match a grant. We give tours and educational visits for kids all throughout the New York Harbor, and indeed at this point now expanding up to Mystic, Connecticut, and out to Oyster Bay.
And where's the boat going to live once it's all restored?
Well, the boat is moored at Pier 66 Maritime, which is at the base of West 26th Street and the Hudson River. Mm-hmm. We've actually been in existence about 12 years, but maintenance is an ongoing, and restoration is unending mm-hmm. when you have a fireboat. And we love having the public come down. Right now we're quiet because it's cold,
right.
But we do have a very, very active...
All right. That's great to know. 26 Street, right by Chelsea Piers over there. Renee, thank you for starting us off on this. And Melvin in Bedford-Stuyvesant, you're on WNYC. Hey, Melvin.
Hi, Brian. Happy New Year.
Same to you. How are you occupying your street?
Well, about 2 years ago, we got together with the residents on both Alice and Agate Court, and we got our block's landmark because we were under threat from a developer, and we decided to band together and get our Black landmark. It was a two-year battle. And because of the landmark status, the residents on Aggie Court were able to get grants from the Landmark Preservation Commission to have their facades redone. That means the bricks were repointed and the brownstones were restored. And so about 15 or so houses on the block were beautifully restored. And so by banding together, we're able to really make a big change and also keep the developer out from encroaching upon our beautiful block that was brownstones were built on both Ellis and Aggie Court in the late 1880s.
That's a great story. Is there a downside to this in that once you have landmark brownstones, then they have to be kept up in the style of the era in which they were built, and then it actually becomes more expensive for homeowners who may be of, you know, moderate means, because you have to get the certain kind of shingle and the certain kind of brick and maintain certain kind of shutters and all that stuff, or not really in your case?
Well, Brian, there's a downside to everything in life, but I believe there are more ups than downs. Our brownstones, this wonderful, great Queen Anne styled brickwork, and you know they're not built that way anymore. And who, in their right mind, would want to alter that?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the, right. The upside is that our neighbors can't decide. Okay, we want to do stucco.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
I
so
hear you.
That's the upside. Also, the property values go up when your block is landmarked.
Definitely, though, that's a form of gentrification. In that it gets harder for people of moderate means to move back, to move in and join you, but certainly good for the homeowners who are there. And that's a great story, Melvin. Thank you very much, and one that I haven't heard anywhere else. Cynthia on the Lower East Side, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. Happy New Year, Brian.
Same to you.
So I had started a group, Save the Essex Street Market.
Uh-huh.
We have a beautiful market down here in the Lower East Side. And it's historic. It's from the 1940s. And it's really, really thriving. It's beautiful. It's eclectic. It's unique. And it's in danger of going the way of, the wrecking ball. They want to recreate it. But if we lose a piece of this history of our Lower East Side, we can't get it back. So we have been working, getting online petitions, going to all the community board meetings, and the vendors feel the same way.
What's the thing about the Essex Street Market or in the Essex Street Market that would be the greatest loss if it disappears?
I think two pieces. Our culture, which is the Lower East Side, and it's going fast. And the other thing is I fear for some of the smaller vendors who have been there for many years who may not have the same chances in a brand new place.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your call. And Linda in Warwick, you're on WNYC. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I helped and banded with neighbors to help fight a development that would develop a wetland. And it's really important because we're losing wetlands like crazy.
And is this up in Warwick where this
yes,
is happening?
Yes, it is. But, I mean, Warwick is only an hour and a half at most from New York City.
Yeah.
And so all of this is spreading out. And keeping going, and every place is becoming more and more suburban because all the wetlands are being developed, and the Army Corps of Engineers actually tells people that they can do it, and they show them how they can.
And even after the housing bubble burst, there's still demand by developers?
Well, what's happening now is that the developments are sort of calmer, so there's not a lot of activity, but what will happen is as soon as economics get better for the developer, they'll start it again. In other words, they always maintain their rights to develop. So it's very difficult to fight them, and you have to keep vigilant for years.
Linda, thank you very much. Happy New Year to you. Eileen in Hoboken, you're on WNYC. Hi, Eileen.
Hi there.
How are you occupying your street?
My issue this year was trying to protect rent control in Hoboken, New Jersey. Hoboken has changed a lot over the years. It's gone from being a lot of mixed ethnicities and mixed income and kind of blue collarish to overwhelmingly white, upscale, real density of luxury housing. One of the things that made me kind of sad in trying to fight for rent control was that people seem to almost be kind of embarrassed to identify themselves as tenants or as renters. There seemed to be some kind of, I don't know, they didn't want to be seen as that. I notice when people speak at city council meetings, they always identify themselves as, I'm a taxpayer, which has become kind of code for I own. And the administration that's running our town, they're kind of people who've been here sort of short term, you know, 10 years or less. And they're all kind of upscale themselves, very wealthy people. And rent control just doesn't have the pressing sort of feeling that it used to have because of the demographic changes to the town.
And, it's, you know, the power may start to swing the other way in general in the country because fewer people are owning. I mean, unfortunately, because of what happened. But it means more people are going to be renting. Rents are going up while home prices are going down because there's more demand for rentals. They say the reason there were more housing starts last month than there had been recently is because people are building rental buildings because they see more renters in the future of this country, which probably means more power to the renters as time goes on and less embarrassment for identifying yourself as one.
Well, you know something, that's exactly what we thought was going to be the reaction when we were fighting for this. And it didn't seem to be the feeling. Hopefully that will change, mm-hmm. but that is certainly the case here in Hoboken. Condo sales are really down and rentals are really up. And it's a lot of it's as much money to live in Hoboken as it is to live in New York City. Mm. Rents and property values are really, really, really high. To rent a studio in Hoboken, a studio apartment, it's $1,200 and $1,600 a month, just like New York City.
It's the Gold Coast.
Yeah.
Eileen, thank you very much. Happy New Year. And Robert in Brighton Beach, you're on WNYC. Hi, Robert.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
Good. How are you occupying your street?
Well, we're trying to occupy the Coney Island Boardwalk because we've been working for about the past year and a half, a group of us have, to save the boardwalk from becoming a sidewalk, essentially, because the Parks Department has been pushing a plan, which nobody seems to like except the Parks Department, to concrete over the iconic Coney Island Boardwalk. So we've petitioned.
In other words, literally, instead of wood, it would be concrete?
Not only would it be, but they took $15 million of stimulus funds about a year and a half ago and did two sections in concrete already. That is a two-block section in Brighton Beach and a three-block section at the Coney Island end of the boardwalk. And in October, our group showed up at the New York City Design Commission, which is a little-known city agency that has to sign off on any plan for a public project to go forward. And we showed that those sections have been deteriorating just within a year and a half, substantially, because of you don't put concrete in a saltwater environment, to say nothing of having passion about maintaining something that's so historic and iconic.
Do they want it? I understand your side why people would want the historic nature of the wooden boardwalk. Why do they want it? Is it that they think the concrete is going to be easier to maintain?
Sure. There are three reasons that they put forth, all specious. The first is that concrete is cheaper. That's not true. It's only cheaper in terms of initial installation. The second, they say, is that there's been a citywide dictate to limit the use of rainforest wood, which is true. However, there are many sustainable hardwoods that could be used in its place. That's a real easy one to discount. And the third one is that they need the concrete to support their heavy vehicles, which is really something, because they're admitting, and they do admit, that the main reason for the deterioration of the boardwalk is not pedestrian traffic, but heavy vehicles. The heavy vehicles that they have are their Parks Department vehicles that collect the trash. Any suggestions of alternate ways to do it, as other boardwalk communities do, for example, collecting it from the sand with the baskets lined up along the edge of the boardwalk, go nowhere. So we've been fighting them, and if there's anybody who wants to show up January 30th is the next Design Commission meeting, and they...
We got to leave it there, Robert, because we're out of time. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
January 30th, next Design Commission meeting, says Robert, about the Coney Island Boardwalk, occupying the boardwalk, the last call in our call-in on Occupy Your Street. What was the most local cause you have worked for this year? Coming up, the latest news, and then another hour of our year-end special, No Polls or Pundits, Just You. Our next question is going to be, how have you changed your mind in 2011?